UFO bloodlines and elite technology, according to John Warner IV. Biblical scholar Mauro Biloni distinguishes between two factions of the Elohim. Part 4 of the David Adair interview series covers moon secrets and suppressed breakthrough space technologies. Stephen Greer's 2023 Year in Review and State of UFO Disclosure. The Farsight Institute does a project on a human extraterrestrial base on Mars. House of Representatives Oversight Committee to receive a UFO briefing from the Intelligence Community Inspector General. And alien interview data is starting to get more attention amongst UFO researchers. Jean-Charles Moyen releases the trailer to Starseed Revelations 3, covering the Japanese space arc. There's growing interest in evidence of human-looking extraterrestrials walking amongst us. An important disclosure project interview from AH concerning the Boeing Aerospace Corporation. And there's much debate over a recently released video concerning what appears to be a 10-foot-tall alien walking in the streets of Miami.
You're listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala, your source for the uncensored truth regarding the human, extraterrestrial, global, and political agenda. Click the like button and subscribe to this channel. And now, here's Dr. Michael Sala.
Well, welcome to the first episode of the Week in Review for 2024. It is going to be a bumper year for exopolitics, and so I'm going to bring to you the top stories every week so that you learn what is the most exopolitically relevant story for that week. So I want to begin with what I covered since the last Week in Review on December 30. So there was an interview with John Warner IV on the Dark Journalist podcast. And John Warner IV, he's the son of a deceased U.S. Senator, John Warner III. And John Warner, he got a bird's eye view, besides his father, who had access to a lot of classified programs and went to see a lot of classified projects, or at least got to learn about those. And John Warner would accompany his father and got to meet some very interesting people. And we're talking people that are former generals or former CEOs for various corporations. So he got to hear some very interesting information about UFOs, about the secret extraterrestrial reverse engineering programs, and he did his own private research to learn more about it. Because his mother's side comes from the elite Mellon banking family, he had the opportunity to get entry at a very high level into this secret world of power, classified programs, but he chose not to. So he has become a maverick, and he has been releasing some very interesting information. So this is the interview he just did, the latest interview with Dark Journalist, and he covers UFO bloodlines, elite technology. He has released a new book, and I do plan to interview him soon about his new book, where we go into more details into these kind of bloodline families and how they are involved in UFOs and the reverse engineered technology that has been secretly developed by ruling elites. So that's something to be something I will cover in the future, but for the moment, I do recommend this interview he did with Daniel List on his Dark Journalist podcast. And one thing I do want to point out, one of the reasons I included this in the Week in Review, is that John Warner does go into the, I think, reality of what has happened behind the scenes concerning these reverse engineered extraterrestrial technologies. There's no waffling. There's no kind of enigma concerning these retrieved technologies that you get from a lot of researchers now that are focused on the David Grush and the Bob Lazar information, which seems to be predicated on the idea that, yes, a lot of extraterrestrial technologies have been recovered, but the corporations have been unable to successfully reverse engineer these. And so what we're left with is this kind of like enigma of these crashed UFOs and extraterrestrial biological entities in some kind of corporate facility. And there's this struggle involving, on the one side, the US Congress, brave whistleblowers, researchers, trying to get to learn, you know, what is going on in these corporate laboratories where they have all this material but they're not sharing it, and that but what is known is that they have not been successfully reverse engineered. So John Warner breaks through all that, and he's very clear that these technologies have been reverse engineered. Okay, so here is a tweet from Elena Danan where she points out this interview with Mauro Bellino, who is an Italian biblical scholar, and he is a world-renowned translator for the Bible using the interlinear translation, the interlinear version, which is the word-for-word translation of both the Old Testament and the New Testament. So that's where you get the Bible in its raw language describing different events and different beings. And so he has done this kind of a biblical translation for decades. And so he's come out to point out that there's not just one God, Yahweh, in the Bible, which is the kind of conventional view you get from most biblical researchers, Bible translators, and of course the general public, worshippers, and so forth. But in fact, that there's more than one, there's several, and that these are the Elohim. And what Mauro Bellino does is that he describes that there are different types of Elohim. Now, for those of you that recall last week where I did a segment where I criticized a well-known researcher for putting out the information that the Elohim are evil and that they're here to oppress us and kind of like control and eat us, that in fact that there are nuances here, that they're both good and bad, positive and negative Elohim. And Mauro Bellino, he released a video kind of shortly after that. So I don't know if this kind of like, if that my video kind of like inspired him to put something out. But his video where he describes these two different types of Elohim is very, very important. So what he does is that he compares different Bible versions, and that is different Bible versions, and compares that with Greek theology. And so he describes how there was a faction of the Elohim that followed Yahweh, and Yahweh was a warlord, and Yahweh was manipulating humanity and enslaving them, really, and that there were in fact two factions of Elohim. One was the faction that were war lovers, and the other was the faction that loved art and philosophy. So this is where we get back to here. This is where I get to cite what Mauro Bellino said in his video. And he says, and at the timestamp 1535, what he says is that Hephaestus and Athena, they are the two Greek gods of wisdom and technology, are lovers of art and philosophy. Yahweh, on the other hand, was war-loving. So there you have two factions of the Elohim, or two factions of the gods, if we're using the Greek kind of pantheon as a guide, that describes how these different Elohim, some were war lovers, others were wanting to promote art and philosophy amongst humanity. And also one of the things that Mauro Bellino pointed out was that the supreme god, or the Elohim, had different lots cast before them, assigning particular Elohim to different regions. So that what that suggests is that you had the earth being assigned to different Elohim. So like Athens would be assigned, well, if we're talking about the Greeks, Athens would be assigned to, say, Athena. Sparta would be assigned to the Greek god of wars, Ares. And similarly, in the biblical account, or in the account we get from Sumeria, you have these different assignments of Elohim or Anunnaki being assigned different areas. And so what we get is that the earth was divided up for the Elohim, and particular Elohim would get control over different territories. Some Elohim were all about war and conquest, so they would get their vassal humans to engage in war and conquest, whereas other Elohim were more about encouraging art and philosophy. And so we get the Greek city-state of the Greek city-state of Athens encouraging art and philosophy. So yeah, that I think really puts to rest this idea for those that want to know, are the Elohim uniformly, quote, brutal and murderous to humans, as this researcher claims? And I think it's worth pointing out that that's also what the deep state wants. The deep state wants us to believe that the gods, the ancient gods, were all evil, brutal, murderous, and this is something that we need to kind of like be wary of, that the returning gods are uniformly evil, brutal, and murderous. Whereas, according to the research that I've been doing, that the return of the Elohim is happening, that the return of the gods is happening. And what we need to do is to be nuanced. We need to identify who are the war lovers, who are the ones that are the lovers of art and philosophy. Because the war lovers, well, you know, they're just going to manipulate us because they want to use us as vassals in their wars, because they see us as just blunt instruments that can be used to take over territory belonging, in their perspective, to other rival Elohim or rival Anunnaki. Whereas the lovers of art and philosophy, they work together. They collaborate. So, okay, now we move to the new year. So on January 1st, my very first podcast for the new year for 2024 was the concluding part of the David Adair interview series. And this is Moon Secrets and Suppressing Breakthrough Space Technologies. Now, this covered the final stage of David's career, and I thought it was very interesting that he got to talk about this National Technology Transfer Center. That I didn't know about that NASA had created the National Technology Transfer Center and assigned it responsibility for transferring the scientific knowledge acquired from space experiments conducted, whether from Skylab or through the space shuttle, and bringing those into the public arena. And while there were some technologies that were released in this wave, and NASA talks up the space technologies that have been applied and have become kind of mainstream in terms of schools and industry, David Adair's experience was that a lot of his more innovative technologies were shut down. And one of these in technologies involved a cure for diabetes using some electrical biological process he called electrophoresis. And so this NTTC, even though it was set up to try to disseminate these technologies, what David found was that when that technology was presented to that organization, it had lack of funding and lack of support to kind of push that technology through into the public arena. And so it would die. It would essentially disappear. And so that frustrated David to no end. And in the interview, he described, as I recall, five technologies, advanced space technologies that he worked on that were stifled in that way. So by the end, by 2003, he was just sick and tired of it. And so that's when he retired and he began to work with artificial intelligence and developed his own private laboratory. And so he has very clear views about the dangers of AI. And he has a very kind of not such a positive view about where we're heading as a civilization. And he kind of felt that at the end of the day, it would be the return of a positive extraterrestrial fleet associated with this ancient extraterrestrial organism or entity called Pithalum that was using his body as a life jacket. So fascinating interview. The four-part series was really fascinating. And I will continue to liaise with David, and hopefully we will do future interviews. And of course, I will let you know when that happens. Now we get to Dr. Stephen Greer. And he released a year in review and the state of disclosure. And so he discusses what has been happening around the planet. Now, you know, from the get-go, I just wanted to be clear that I do have concerns about Dr. Greer's data curation, where he only presents data that supports his extraterrestrials are benevolent narrative. So, you know, that is a problem. But nevertheless, he makes many valid points in his 2023 year in review and the state of UFO disclosure. And I just wanted to touch on some of these more critical points because I think it's important. I do highly respect Dr. Greer for all the work he's done for over three decades now in bringing out the truth. And I think he has a really excellent understanding of the secrecy system and the tools of repression used by the deep state to keep the UFO extraterrestrial information out of the public arena. So he's definitely worth listening to. And so here's some of the points he raises in his video that I thought were very interesting. He's got hundreds of firsthand witnesses. I think now he says that he's got close to 1,000 or maybe over 1,000 firsthand witnesses that he has spoken to that have revealed their participation in extraterrestrial projects over the decades. And later on, I will be talking about one of these witnesses, A.H., who was a Boeing aerospace employee who truly had some amazing information to share. So I'll give you an example of one of these witnesses that I think is very, very relevant. But so this tells us that these whistleblowers have been coming forward for several decades now. It's not a new phenomenon, because that is one of the things that, unfortunately, this kind of this modern era that is focusing on the testimonies of people like David Grush, Lou Elizondo, they get caught up into thinking that, well, You know, this is where the pioneering UFO research is happening now. But no, it's actually been happening for decades. It's just that those earlier whistleblowers were ignored or overlooked. And now finally, people are ready to hear their testimonies. And even though some of them have passed on, some of them are still around. So point two, the alien spacecraft have been shot down or impacted by classified electronic weapons surveillance systems. So that's very important because there have been these craft that are extraterrestrial in origin that visit from some other solar system, whether they got here through some portal, whether they got here through some kind of mothership, or whether there was some interdimensional gateway that they used. They get here, and then they're targeted using directed energy weapons or radar surveillance systems, and they are shot down. So it's not just that they come here from some other world through some portal or some other ship, and they just crash because they're poorly designed. No, they're being shot down. Now, that's important to acknowledge. And he has witnesses, whistleblowers, that talk about that. And later on in this week in review, I will be talking about the case of Daniel Salter, who worked with the National Reconnaissance Office. And, he also was knowledgeable about these UFOs that were being shot down. In fact, Daniel Salter was one of the witnesses that Stephen Greer interviewed. Okay, so the retrieval of crashed alien spacecraft has led to their successful reverse engineering by major corporations such as Lockheed's Skunk Works. So that's a critical point right there. Greer has been able to interview many whistleblowers, many insiders that have confirmed these technologies that have emerged out of spacecraft that have been shot down, that they have been successfully reverse engineered. And the extraterrestrial spacecraft in total have been reverse engineered and they are being used. So that, again, is very different to what we're getting from the kind of mainstream UFO researchers that are focusing on the David Grush testimony, which I've said in the past. I think David Grush has done a great service in opening up the minds of many people that have been shut down to this UFO phenomenon. Now they're taking it seriously because he is a very highly qualified individual. I think 14 years with the Air Force and the NRO. But he was only given access or learned about unsuccessful reverse engineering projects. So I think he really is got some knowledge, but not the kind of details that Stephen Greer has been able to acquire over the three decades of his research. So I know people like to knock Stephen Greer, you know, making some comments about him in terms of, let's just say, an overinflated ego and so forth. But the man has done good research, and I think his whistleblowers that he's interviewed over the course of three decades, and he's got many of them on videotape, and he's released many of those, including AH that I'm going to be talking about soon. They are very clear that these extraterrestrial spacecraft have been reverse engineered. Okay, so point four, military abductions of individuals using alien reproduction vehicles. Okay, so this is where probably the difference between myself and Stephen Greer emerges and many others. Stephen Greer believes that all the negative experiences emerging from the abduction phenomenon don't involve genuine gray extraterrestrials or insectoid extraterrestrials. They are, in fact, programmed life forms that have been cloned from extraterrestrial DNA that are being exploited on these alien reproduction vehicles developed by the deep state. So he has a narrative, and it's a very interesting one, and I think he's partly correct. I think that some of the UFOs that we see up there that people believe are gray extraterrestrial spacecraft are in fact alien reproduction vehicles built by Lockheed, Northrop Grumman, and other major aerospace corporations, and that they're crewed by these programmed life forms, and that they are involved in some of the abductions. I think that actually is happening. But I do not believe that all abductions involve programmed life forms. I mean, there's just too much data showing that these gray aliens are themselves a distinct species coming from other solar systems. I think there have been many individuals who have, we're talking about contactees as well as people that have worked with the extraterrestrials that have pointed out that these are beings from another solar system. And you have, for example, Dan Sherman, who wrote the book Above Top Secret. And Dan Sherman worked for the US Air Force for 12 years, and he was some of that period working at the National Security Agency out of Fort Meade. And he found out about these agreements between the secret government or military authorities and these gray extraterrestrials. So we're not talking about programmed life forms. We're talking about gray extraterrestrials from another solar system that were giving information to the NSA about how many humans they had abducted. And so there's many more cases like that. So yeah, so I think Greer is partly correct, but not fully. Okay, so there's a vast black budget funding system has been set up to fund extraterrestrial related projects that operates as a criminal enterprise. So this is where I think Stephen Greer's insights are most valuable. I mean, he really is very correct in terms of what has been set up behind the system, behind the scenes, resembles a criminal enterprise in terms of the way money is used, the way people are intimidated, people are killed. These projects are run without any kind of transparency, any kind of accountability, which violates the U.S. Constitution, overrides the requirement for the House of Representatives or the Congress to play an oversight role over all government activities, and yet these activities are kept from the knowledge of the Senate or the House of Representatives. Intimidation, assassination of eyewitnesses linked to extraterrestrial contact or classified programs involving ET life. So, you know, this is one of the sadder parts of the secrecy system, that people are intimidated and eliminated. And many of the people that Stephen Greer has worked with, including himself, have been threatened, intimidated, and there have been assassination attempts. And Greer has described this. In my case, personally, I have not experienced anything like this. But some of the people I work with, including JP, this U.S. Army insider, he has been intimidated, threatened, and subjected to some kind of assassination attempts. So this does happen, and it's very sad, but it's just the reality. Even though there are white hats wanting this information to come forward, and that they support whistleblowers coming forward, which is the only reason why Stephen Greer was able to interview so many people, there is still these black hats who want to suppress all of this. Okay, so here is a far sight remote viewing project of a possible base on Mars based on NASA JPL photos and Professor Haim Eshed's comments about a secret joint human extraterrestrial base. So there were five remote viewers that came up with very similar data on an ancient Mars base being repurposed by humans and extraterrestrials to build a futuristic society that manufactures advanced technologies and receives supplies from Earth. And in this remote viewing session, the remote viewers all described very similar things, and they described that this was largely a voluntary interspecies enterprise. So we're talking about humans working alongside different types of extraterrestrials, and that there was artificial intelligence also involved, and that this was by and large a very kind of a utopian or very positive base, as opposed to the more oppressive corporate-run bases that people who have been describing the German-run dark fleet or the interplanetary corporate conglomerate or a corporate-run enterprise on Mars that in the past was very oppressive, that has been apparently replaced. Now, you know, a couple of things here, that does seem to support some claims that there's been a recent transition on Mars in terms of governance, that the indigenous species on Mars have taken control, that there was some kind of liberation of on Mars. So I think that is very, very, very plausible. So I think that this data does support that narrative that Mars recently has gone through some liberation effect. Now, how reliable is this data? I think if we look at the five remote viewers and what they presented, I think the data is pretty good. I mean, I think it's very clean. It's very consistent and coherent with one another. And I think it's worth looking at. Okay, so this is where I have to make an announcement. Unfortunately, there have been a lot of hoaxes. A lot of people have been setting up social media accounts, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on Telegram, whether it's on Instagram, pretending to be me. And I've been making a lot of announcements on this on Telegram, but I think the time has come where I make a general announcement that there are a lot of hoaxes out there. People have created hoax sites, and I think, you know, it could be just Nigerian scammers trying to make a quick buck. It could be psyops from the covert community wanting to undermine and kind of like prejudice my research and compromise me in the eyes of the general public. It could be one or both of those things or other possibilities. So what I've done is I created a page on my website, exopolitics.org. Exopolitics.org is my primary website. So that's where you go if you want to, if you're concerned about whether or not you've been contacted by someone claiming to be me. And often, if anyone contacts you by private message, chat, or is posting, making any kind of financial statement or request for investment, it's a hoax. I don't do that. The only thing I do is say, you know, register for my webinars, buy my books. That's how I support myself. Anything else is a hoax. And I don't solicit donations. I just promote my books. I promote my webinars. And that's it. If someone is making any claim, you know, to buy gold or silver or invest in cryptocurrencies, anything like that, it's a hoax. They're trying to scam you. So here are I have a list on my exopolitics.org site. So it's exopolitics.org/official. So it's nice and easy. You can go there, and that is gives you the list of all of my official social media sites. So there's quite a list there. You know, I've been doing this for over 20 years now, so I've accumulated quite a list of social media sites. So everything is there. Apple Podcasts, Crowdcast, Facebook, Instagram. Yeah, I do have an Instagram account. I'll be doing more on Instagram because that's going to be a way where I'm going to be working with JP to release more of his information through Instagram in the form of videos and pictures. So more on that later. LinkedIn, Rumble, Spotify, Twitter, Telegram, and so on. And my official website, so exopolitics.org, exopoliticstoday.com, Michael Sala. These are my official websites. These are just associated with me. You know, there are some other websites that I'm affiliated with, but these are the ones that just contain my information. Okay, so that's where you go if you are not sure if a website you're visiting, a social media site you've subscribed to, or someone that's contacted you, whether or not that's genuine or not, this is how you find out. All right, so, okay, so what we've learned is that there is going to be a House of Representatives Oversight Committee briefing given by the Intelligence Community Inspector General, and that's going to be held on January 12th. And that is something that I'm not that enthusiastic about much being revealed through that mechanism, because it does seem that these classified briefings are very good at kind of like restricting the classified information that is presented, that the people who have been cleared to be in that classified facility, they might only hear some very general information about some classified program. And the what we can maybe hope for is that the Inspector General might confirm some of David Grusch's UFO information. Now, how much of that can be disclosed, we don't know, but I think that would be a positive thing because, as I've already mentioned, David Grusch is front and center of this kind of recent push to get classified information concerning UFOs, retrieved alien spacecraft, released into the public arena. So that's a good thing. That's a positive thing, even though, as I said, I think it may be kind of like part of a limited hangout because you're not revealing the truth about what has been reverse engineered. But nevertheless, I think it is a step in the right direction. So if the Inspector General confirms some of David Grusch's information, that is a positive development. But how much of that can be disclosed? Now, this is where we get into the possibility that some of these House representatives, people like Congressman Tim Burchett, who's been very vocal, and of course, there have been other members of the House of Representatives. Matt Gaetz is someone that comes to mind, who have been wanting to get information out there. So if they hear something in a classified setting, could they reveal it in the House of Representatives? That I believe there is some kind of protection that members of Congress have for revealing information in the House of Representatives, where if they did it in the public arena, they could be prosecuted or arrested. But I think if they do it in the House of Representatives, they do receive some protection. So that will be interesting to see. Okay, so here we have something concerning a interview that Danny Sheehan did. He is also one of these Disclosure Project witnesses. He says that he was present when he learned from an individual who was directly involved in an alien being interviewed and recorded on video. So what Danny Sheehan says is that he spoke to someone who was a first-hand witness to an alien being interviewed. And this is, I think, part of the kind of catastrophic disclosure theme that I think we are moving into this year, that it seems that the controlled disclosure effort that was pushed by, let's assume they were white hats, there's still questions over whether or not you can assume that the Schumer Rounds Amendment for the National Defense Authorization Act for 2024, that amendment that was known as the UAP Disclosure Act for 2024, that was basically gutted and has now been incorporated into the NDAA for 2024, but in a form that doesn't create a 9-member panel, review panel in the National Archives, which has subpoena power, power of eminent domain to get their hands on these technologies. But instead what you have is a UAP records collection that's going to be established in the National Archives, which is a kind of a small step forward, but nothing like what was being attempted. So that controlled disclosure initiative is generally accepted to have failed. And so now the other scenario is catastrophic disclosure, where you're going to have a lot of whistleblowers coming forward, and they're going to come forward and just spill the beans on what they know and what's been happening, and that this is what's going to be supported. In a way, if you go back to 2001 with Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project, that was an example, I think, of catastrophic disclosure. But what happened was that the world wasn't ready for it at the time, or it was shut down. That it just didn't happen. Now there are efforts to kind of do that again, but have a lot more whistleblowers coming forward. But now the world media is paying attention. So with David Grush, you've got him being one of the whistleblowers. You have other people in the background that are going to be coming forward talking about this. Michael Schellenberger is an investigative journalist, and he says he's spoken to up to 40 whistleblowers, 40 insiders that are wanting to come forward. Now, at the moment, they haven't come forward, so technically they're not whistleblowers, but when they do come forward, they will become whistleblowers. So that could be catastrophic disclosure. So one of the aspects of catastrophic disclosure is that people are going to come forward and say, yep, yeah, the alien interview videos are real. I was there. I saw that. Or I know someone that was there. And so this alien interview genre is, I think, going to be something that experiences the light of day very soon. And very interesting that back in 1987, so we're talking, 37 years ago. My math still works. That's good. I was a math teacher once, believe it or not. Yeah, back in 1984, I was a math teacher for a year, and well, actually 6 months, and teaching high school children taught me that if I continued to be a math teacher, I would go insane with those high school kids. So kudos to math teachers out there teaching high school math. I tried it and realized that, no, I can't do this. If I do this, I'll go mad. So I went back to university and to get a master's degree in philosophy and a PhD and so forth. But anyway, so math still does work. So this is someone, John Stewart, not to be confused with the comedian. John Stewart is a former wrestler, and he became very interested in the 1997 alien interview leaked by a whistleblower, Victor. And he's done a lot of research to show that the alien interview by Victor is genuine. And here he found this interview featuring John Lear. And so here is John Stewart talking about this segment in an interview featuring John Lear. So let's just kind of move forward a little bit. So there you have the alien interview. This alien, at this point in the interview, he's under this stress, and there's a medic there trying to help him. But he was being interviewed. And interestingly, what John Stewart found was this 1987 interview that John Lear did with George Knapp back in the day. This was before Bob Lazar came out, and John Lear talked about a video of an interview with an alien extraterrestrial would be released. And so 10 years later, you have Victor releasing the video of the alien being interviewed somewhere at Area 51. So I thought that was very good investigative journalism by John Stewart to find that additional piece of corroborative data showing that these alien interviews videos are real. And I've done a earlier interview with John Stewart. I do plan to do a follow-up soon, where we've talked about the 1997 alien interview as well as some of the other alien interview videos out there. So I think this is probably likely to be part of the catastrophic disclosure that lies ahead in 2024. Okay, so now we move to this this video trailer that was just released by Jean-Charles Moyen. So in his trailer, this is going to be Starseed Revelation 3. So that's where Jean-Charles presents his data, evidence that he has acquired supporting his direct experiences. Now, Jean-Charles is very unusual among contactees or secret space program insiders, is that he actually goes to a lot of effort to present evidence supporting his experiences. He just doesn't tell the story, which is what a lot of whistleblowers or in secret space program witnesses do, that they just come forward, they tell their story, and they don't present data or any evidence supporting that story. And that's why it's a pleasure to work with people like Jean-Charles Moyen, people like Elena Danam, and JP, the Army whistleblower or insider that I have been working with, and Tony Rodriguez, also another one, that all of them do make the effort to present evidence. And so that's very important for what lies ahead. And it's very interesting that they are not being interviewed by the kind of wider alternative community. Why is it that only people that have these stories without any evidence to support them, why is it only they are being interviewed? So anyway, so Jean-Charles Moyen in Starseed Revelation 3, he presents his data concerning his experiences of visiting a space ark in Japan under Mount Fuji, both as a youngster, I think he was 10 years old when he was first taken there, and then as an adult, where he met the custodian of the space ark, and also him having knowledge of a previous life he lived in Japan. So that is what Starseed Revelation 3, that is going to be coming soon. So we can look forward to that, and I'll let you know when that comes out. Okay, so again, as we move into this year of what I think is going to be catastrophic disclosure, people are going to start to awaken to the data concerning human-looking extraterrestrials living amongst us. So here's one a tweet by The One, and he describes three kinds of human-type aliens. They walk amongst us. So this seems to be from one of the old-style internet boards back in the 90s. And I think this was probably either from John Lear himself or from Val Valerium. They used to put out a lot of this type of information concerning different types of human-looking extraterrestrials and different types of extraterrestrials out there. So here you have three human-type aliens. And so, yeah, he describes that. And there's a link he gives for where you can kind of these old bulletin boards. There you have this old bulletin board where it describes different types of aliens, different types of greys, human-looking extraterrestrials. And so there you can find it. I think this information, as I said, I think it either derives from Val Valerium or John Lear. But what I wanted to point out was that, that information is, decades old now. We're talking the 1990s. What I did was in 2004, I presented a typology of different extraterrestrial races, including up to 10 human-looking races. And I did a report in 2004. And so in this report, it's available for free. It came out on July 26, 2004, and I revised it on January 1st, 2005. And here you have different types of extraterrestrials. So I described I describe races that are cooperating with the military-industrial complex. That includes the Greys, the Reptilians, the Insectoids. So there's a table here. Table one, extraterrestrial races cooperating with the military-industrial complex. So the Short Greys, the Tall Greys, Indigenous Reptilians, Draconian Reptilians, a faction of Sirians from Sirius B, and the Anunnaki, a faction of the Anunnaki. So this is in 2004, so I've developed the typology of the different extraterrestrial races working with the military-industrial complex. And then I developed a similar table for the extraterrestrial races that are outside of the military-industrial complex. And this is where you get the humans, the human-looking races. So we have the Talosians, you have the inner Earth humans. Some people describe them as inner Earthers, some as Talothians, some as Agathans. We have the Lyrans, you have the vegans, no, not the ones that eat vegetarian food that doesn't have any kind of animal product or genesis in there. We're talking of beings from the Vega star system, so the true vegans, okay, or also known as Lyra. Of course, the Pleiadians, now we know that there are different factions of the Pleiades. It's not just Pleiadians in general that are outside of the military-industrial complex. We know now from more recent sources that there are negative groups of Pleiadians as well. Procyons, they were also positive guys, Talcedians, Andromedans, Sirians, a positive group of Sirians from the Sirius A star system. Some of these are feline looking, so these are the lion type of Sirians, and so on. So, you know, when we're talking about human looking extraterrestrial races, there's much more than just three amongst us. There are at least 10 that I named. Now, so I developed that typology, that paper, I developed that in my 2013 book, Galactic Diplomacy, Getting to Yes with Extraterrestrials, or Getting to Yes with ET. That was the subtitle. So that was in 2013, and so I presented some pictures in there, some more data. I expanded that. So that's where my efforts in describing these human-looking extraterrestrials living amongst us, and I present all of the data that I could find in the day. So I go over people, you know, going all the way back to the early contactees. We're talking about George Adamski, Howard Menger. Then you have the testimonies of more other contactees, Alex Collier. I also talk about Command Sergeant Major Robert Dean. Talk about all of those cases, all of those different sources. They're presented in my 2013 book that presents all of this data. A lot of data, but as highly as I recommend my book Galactic Diplomacy, I was really dumbfounded by Elena Danan's book A Gift from the Stars, where she describes over 100 extraterrestrial races in her book. Just phenomenal effort, accompanied by really good sketches. I'm a terrible artist. I mean, I do stick figures, and you know, my art efforts are very, very rudimentary. But Elena Danan is an artist, and you get a good feel for these different extraterrestrial races. And I highly recommend that book, not just in terms of the wealth of information and data that Elena put together in her A Gift from the Stars, but also because reading that material helps you, the reader, resonate with which group you are associated with. You know, I often get a lot of people contacting me saying, "Oh, I feel that I'm a starseed, but I'm not sure which group I work with." And I would, in the past, I told them, "Oh, you know, read my 2004 paper or buy my Galactic Diplomacy book." But now I tell them, yeah, just get Elena Danan's 2021 book, A Gift from the Stars, and whichever group you resonate with, that is probably the group you're a starseed from. And I think this is going to be part of the catastrophic disclosure for 2024. More and more people are going to pay attention because, you know, it's Pandora's box being opened. It's not just, oh, yeah, oh, the corporations are have retrieved some extraterrestrial spacecraft, and they're studying these, and we'll let you know when they reverse engineer it. No, it's going to be much more than that. We're going to learn about the alien reproduction vehicles. We're going to learn about the alien interviews. We're going to learn about the human extraterrestrials amongst us. We're going to learn about the different extraterrestrials, positive and negative, that are flying into our solar system or have flown or been interacting with us. This is catastrophic disclosure, and we might see at some point some of the motherships, some of the beings walking, some of the extraterrestrial spacecraft flying over US or world cities. Okay, so here's my interview with Daniel Salter's grandsons, their name, Derek and Daniel. And they are very knowledgeable about their grandfather. They present, this is my second interview with them. And so it's part two of a series, of an ongoing series. And what they presented in their first interview with me was some of the information that they had found, old documents supporting their grandfather's participation in this classified space program or the crash retrieval operations involving extraterrestrial spacecraft. And Daniel Salter wrote a book called Life with a Cosmos Clearance. And so we talked about that in the first interview we did. So in this second interview, we get to talk more about that, but we also talk about documents that they got from the National Archives, giving more details about Daniel Salter's 30-year-plus career he actually was with the U.S. Air Force for 20 years, just over 20 years, and he reached a very high rank as an enlisted officer, as an NCO. He reached the rank of E9, which was Command Sergeant Major, which is the highest rank, or was at the time, for a non-commissioned officer. And so he was, and then at the end of that, he was recruited into the National Reconnaissance Office because of his expertise and knowledge about classified programs, and he knew about UFOs during his 20-plus year career with the US Air Force. So then he was with the NRO for another 12 years or so, something like that. And he retired in the early 1990s. And so what Daniel and Derek were able to get from the National Archives were more records concerning his Air Force career. The NRO records have not been released. The NRO has not acknowledged Daniel Salter's work with them. But nevertheless, there are things that Daniel Salter did, like he was able to drive with an NRO license plate on his car into a military base without being pulled up. And Daniel and Derek tell the story about, I think it was their father who drove Daniel Salter's truck onto a military base, or maybe he was with Daniel Salter and that he was just waved through. And the reason the guards gave was they said whenever they see a license plate with NRO, they don't ask for an ID or anything like that. They just wave them through. So that supports that Daniel Salter did work with the NRO. He was involved in alien crash retrieval operations. He was involved in silencing witnesses that had seen extraterrestrials, seen UFOs, or been in any way involved with these crash retrieval operations. So Daniel Salter was a disclosure project whistleblower with Stephen Greer, and so his testimony is very significant. Okay, so this is the individual I spoke about earlier, A.H. He was another Disclosure Project witness. He worked with the Boeing Aerospace Company, and even though he did not actually speak at the Disclosure Project press conference, there were 21 witnesses that spoke at that. I believe Daniel Salter was on the stage of that, but he got too nervous to actually speak, apparently. And that shows you some of the stress that comes from the threats and intimidation that is leveled against these witnesses. Daniel Salter was prepared to speak at the Disclosure Project press conference, but didn't because of he was just too nervous from all the threats that he had received. So here we have A.H., and he was a Disclosure Project witness, and his testimony was included in the Disclosure Project book. And that is a book that came out in 2001. It's simply titled Disclosure. And Stephen Greer released that in 2001, and it had 60 whistleblower testimonies. And when I made that shift from being a full-time university professor to becoming a UFO researcher, that book made a huge difference for me. That book had the testimonies of 60 whistleblowers, 60 insiders in it, the transcripts of their interviews, a phenomenal accomplishment by Stephen Greer. So for me, in the early years, that was my Bible. I would consult that Disclosure Project book, and A.H.'s testimony was part of that. So here are some of the key takeaways from the interview that, and what I wanted to point out was that A.H.'s interview has just been, well, just released. All you see is the back of his head. He was someone that was very concerned about being outed, so he just used the pseudonym A.H. He worked with the Boeing Aerospace Corporation, so it's well worth listening to this interview to really get a good idea of what's going on. So he's speaking both from his firsthand experiences and knowledge of these projects, but also what he was told by other firsthand witnesses. Now, here are my takeaways, my 13 takeaways. So I'll go through this kind of pretty quickly so that we can finish this hopefully under an hour. So first takeaway, he actually interviewed or got to talk with four-star General Curtis LeMay, who had direct knowledge of the Roswell UFO crash and alien spacecraft stored at Area 51. So that corroborates what David Adair says, that David Adair was protected by General LeMay because General LeMay had that General LeMay's father was in his final months in hospital, was cared for by the mother of David Adair. And that's how General LeMay got to know about David Adair. And General LeMay got to be a sponsor of David Adair's innovative rocket propulsion technologies and then rescued him twice, once at Area 51 and once at the CIA headquarters. Second takeaway, the CIA became the custodian of classified UFO materials and stole them from the US Air Force. So General LeMay confirmed that it's not the Air Force that has the most highly classified UFO files. They were taken by the CIA. And that corroborates what we learn from leaked Majestic documents, that President Kennedy did not command the Air Force to release classified UFO files. He requested those classified UFO files from the CIA director, Alan Dulles. Okay. Third takeaway, the Majestic 12 control group is real, but it's been renamed. One of the names is Zodiac, which makes sense. Majestic 12, Zodiac, 12 signs in the Zodiac. Fourth takeaway, Henry Kissinger and George Bush Sr. were very familiar with the extraterrestrial subject. Henry Kissinger was associated with the Majestic 12 control group. Tonopah Test Range, that's adjacent to Area 51, that is also involved in the study of UFO craft. And this corroborates the Niara Isley information. She worked with the Air Force. She was involved in using radar, advanced radar tracking, and she was taken to Tonopah Test Range to test the most advanced radar tracking system that the Air Force had at the time, and this was between 1981 to 1984, as I recall. And she was, and she saw a UFO and tried to track it, and that's, and so this corroborates that testimony. AH's testimony also corroborates that McDonnell Douglas Aircraft Company was involved in classified UFO studies. That corroborates the whistleblower testimony of William Tompkins, who says that the U.S. Navy was having Douglas Aircraft Company come up with designs for these innovative or designs of some kind of alien reproduction vehicle that would use some knowledge gained from extraterrestrials to build very large cigar-shaped craft, also triangle-shaped craft, and some of the other different shapes that the U.S. Navy was interested in. Another takeaway, multiple UFO crashes in 1947, 1948, and 49 were caused by high-powered radar transmitters. And that corroborates the testimony of Colonel Philip Corso. That Colonel Corso says that he was he had a command at somewhere at White Sands Missile Range, and that he met with an extraterrestrial, a gray extraterrestrial, and that the gray extraterrestrial requested that the high powered radar transmitter be turned off so that he could leave. So that corroborated that these high-powered radar transmitters, even you know, in that early period, could take down or incapacitate extraterrestrial spacecraft. Another important insight from AH was that there was a relocation of extraterrestrial-related material from Area 51, the S4 facility in particular, to Utah. And AH says that they moved up to 40% of the material that was held at S4 to Utah. And this corroborates William Tompkins' testimony about the U.S. Navy building its secret space craft out of Utah, that these very long cigar-shaped craft that became Solar Warden, that the first vehicles were constructed in the 1970s and 1980s out of Utah. Ninth takeaway, Project Red Light involves the reverse engineering of captured extraterrestrial spacecraft. So Project Red Light is the name given to this effort to reverse engineer extraterrestrial spacecraft. And I've already mentioned, yeah, according to David Grush and more recent whistleblowers, this has not happened yet successfully. But of course, witnesses associated with, you know, William Tompkins, AH, Stephen Greer, they say, yes, it has happened. Okay, 10th takeaway, President Carter left out of the loop on classified UFO files, so that corroborates claims that most US presidents are left out of the loop, apart from President George Herbert Walker Bush. Number 11, underground ET base in Puerto Rico. So this is very interesting. So AH confirmed that there's an underground extraterrestrial base in Puerto Rico underneath a lake. Now, what's interesting, for those that have been following my JP testimonies, I interviewed JP's father. And what he said in our interview was that he saw a very large orb, very large object coming out of a lake in Puerto Rico, and that he had an interaction with it, missing time and so forth. So that shows that there is an intergenerational phenomenon happening between JP and his father and this underground extraterrestrial base in Puerto Rico, or maybe underwater extraterrestrial base in Puerto Rico. So very interesting. Number 12, Project Looking Glass, that exists, that this is an attempt using extraterrestrial technology to look into the future to predict future scenarios and outcomes. So this corroborates the testimonies of Dan Burrish and Andy Basiago that Project Looking Glass is real. And finally, the alien face on Mars is real, and that Martians established a human civilization at least 45,000 years ago. So that a significant segment of humanity are descended from these ancient Martian colonists who came to Earth at least 45,000 years ago, if not earlier, to establish colonies on the Earth. So that's very interesting. And that corroborates a lot of the Sumerian cuneiform texts talking about the Anunnaki coming to Earth, having mining operations on Mars, that the Igigi came from Mars to Earth and so forth. So fascinating interview with A.A.H., and I think I would recommend that to you to watch. So here is something that is breaking news. Just before I recorded the week in review, there was this incident in Florida at some mall, Bayside Mall, that generated a massive police presence. And people started posting videos of what they thought was a very tall alien entity walking around. So this is the question. This is the debate. So there's a lot of debate whether or not this, and you can just see it now. You can see this being here walking around. Some people believe that is like a 10-foot tall alien. And it does look very, very tall. And so you see all these police cars lined up here, and there was a massive police presence there. Now, some people say, well, you know, this incident just involved the police intercepting or dealing with a lot of young people fighting. And that, yeah, that did happen. So, and that's leading to the debate. Yeah, was this incident really about a very tall being, an extraterrestrial presumably, or was it associated with youths fighting? So here's the still shot showing that being. And again, here it is circled. And here's another video I found that maybe shows it a little. Let's do that again. That shows that. Okay, so here's another video that shows it a little more closely. And so here, you know, again, you can see this figure, but it's not clear that we're talking about one tall being, a 10-foot being, or could it be two? Some people believe that it could be like two people walking side by side. So there might be a very mundane explanation for this, but it's very, very interesting nevertheless. So that's the breaking news at the time of this week in review. So I'm glad you joined me for this. So it is going to be a huge year. Very soon I will be announcing my first webinar for February 3, which is going to be what's coming in 2024. And we're going to be looking at catastrophic disclosure. And so I've covered information in this presentation that I think does lend itself to this catastrophic disclosure scenario. Again, to overcome the algorithms, if you can like and share this week in review, would very much appreciate that. So thank you. I hope you had a wonderful New Year celebration. We did. And I will be giving you another update next week from my new home. And I will be very pleased to announce that in my next week in review. So thank you and aloha.
You have been listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe to this channel. Join or start a conversation in the comments. take the time to explore the vast library of best-selling books, webinars, and podcasts by Dr. Sala. Visit exopoliticstoday.com.